We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Seasons change and our love went cold. Feed the flames because we can't let go. Run away, but we're running in circles. Run away. Run away, run away. Double-faced.
Something about double-faced cards.
That's right. We are actually talking about double-faced cards today. Modal double-faced cards. Modal DFCs. Too many names for this, but there's only one name for this podcast, and it's the Command Zone Podcast. You're watching and listening to it. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
This is the best start ever. I like how we were singing the song. We both had to pause because we didn't actually know
the lyrics
for that middle part.
Yeah.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. Yeah, we promised it. Here it is. We're doing an entire episode about the modal double face cards. It's not quite as complicated as the mutate mechanic, but it's still fairly complicated. There's some corner cases. We're going to go over the rules. Then we're going to talk about the individual cards. These are the cards, again, that new to this set, new to Magic. They have a land on one side, and then on the other side, they have could be a land, could be a creature, sorcery, instant, and you choose when you play the card which side of the card you're playing.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. Opens up a lot of options for gameplay, and I think it's going to be pretty interesting for players to figure out, and we'll talk about this, how many of these cards you can put into your deck without destroying the integrity of it. And of course, when you're going to do that, you're going to need these cards. You're going to need to purchase them. You're going to need to put them into awesome, awesome decks of yours. And to do that, please head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. Card Kingdom is your number one place if you're going to want to pick up new singles, sealed products, and more. Zendikar Rising is here and also on the way, Commander Legends. There's going to be a ton of stuff that's getting reprinted, hopefully, and there's also going to be lots of cards for you to purchase. So you support the show, you're going to buy the cards anyway, head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. It's as simple as that.
And when you do get your hands on these cards, you know you're going to want to protect them, especially if you're buying like set boosters,
yeah,
or collector boosters where you get the showcase art or the full frame art or whatever all this stuff is, foils. There's expeditions in this set. You don't want any of that stuff to get messed up, and the best way to protect all of your game pieces is by using Ultra Pro products. You know, they came out, we've been talking about them a lot recently, with the Pro Gloss Eclipse sleeves.
Yes.
So that you're, especially for foils, it's really, really good because, yeah, they maintain their vibrancy. They really look great in those sleeves, but they have that classic Eclipse protection where they're not going to get messed up. Your Eclipse sleeves are going to last forever. And that shuffle feel,
yes,
that perfect shuffle feel that only Ultra Pro gives you.
I think that's my favorite shuffling feel in the game.
Yeah.
I've tried a lot of sleeves out, and some of them, it's a little rougher, like they've got matte edge in the back. No, these sleeves are slick.
Smooth.
Smooth.
Like butter, we
like
keep
butter,
saying.
But do not put butter anywhere near your cards.
Yeah, don't do that. And the final way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You can contribute to Extra Turns, Game Nights, this podcast, all at once. You also get access to Extra Turns and Game Nights before the general public. You get to see it early, and you get to see it ad-free.
Yeah.
A bunch of perks, and that's at Patreons, or patrons at any level, mm-hmm, get that perk. So, and there are other perks, like talking to Jimmy and I in our Discord. Definitely, if you go to patreon.com/commandzone, you can check that out, and it really does help our content out.
And we shout out one lucky patron every single episode. So this episode is dedicated
to Bobby Enns.
And there's actually one more sweet perk to being a patron.
Bobby.
Oh, yeah,
you rock.
Yeah, you rock. In fact, Bobby, you rock because you also get this last final sweet perk.
Yeah,
you probably
thought we weren't going to do that this year. Obviously, with the pandemic and everything, it's kind of messed up our schedule. But we are running auditions once again for your chance to be a guest on Game Nights. You know, we get thousands of emails,
yes,
every single year with people asking, like, saying, I love Game Nights. I want to be on the show. How do I get on the show? Here's how you do it. You have to be a patron of the Command Zone. Again, patreon.com/commandzone. And that's it. That's the only bar that you have to clear. You don't have to be at any certain reward tier. If you give as little as $1 per month, you will be eligible to audition for the show. And we have a post on our Patreon page that gives you all the details about how to enter to become a guest on the show to audition.
Yeah, the only other restriction is that you do need to be above the age of 18, mm-hmm. and this is because of legal requirements, but you can be from around the world, international, that's no worries. So definitely check out the Patreon. And the other people that have qualified would be the ones that contributed to our Game Nights Kickstarter last year at the right tier. But don't worry, we're going to make sure that everyone gets in. We'll get in contact with everyone.
And people always ask us, so I'll just answer this question. They ask about timing, like, when are you going to shoot that episode? Because people are like, oh, I have a vacation planned for next year, and they want to know. Here's the thing. Once we choose who the guest is based on the auditions, then we work with that person to figure out a date that's going to work. So don't worry. We'll figure it out, because it's not like we're going to record it, you know, 2 weeks after we pick the person, it's going to come out right away. This takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So we'll work with you on the scheduling.
Yep. And, you know, some of my favorite episodes of Game Nights in the past couple of years have been the fan ones. So we very much look forward to seeing all of your auditions.
All right. Let's go into the main topic, the Modal Double Face cards, MDFCs for short. Again, new cards there. Lands on at least one side. Some are lands on both sides.
Yep.
And then when you play the card, you can choose which side you're playing. So we're going to use Baine Veil as our example card. Jimmy, you want to read it?
Yeah. So Baine Veil is one of the Modal Double Face cards that is a land on the back, but actually a spell on the front. On the front, it is one in a blue for an instant, and it says creatures your opponents control get -2/-0 until end of turn. And if you look at the bottom left of the card, it has a little arrow pointing to the other side saying land, and it gives the idea of what's going to be on the other side. So if you flip it over, it becomes Baine Coast, which is a land that enters the battlefield tapped, and you can tap it to add a blue mana. And again, if you look in the bottom left of this side of the card, it'll show you that's an instant from one in blue on the other side.
So these are different than double face cards we've had in the past, which usually have a clear side that is the front side that you're playing every time you play the card, and then you meet some kind of condition and it flips over to the other side.
And the other side doesn't have like a mana cost or often, a way to play it. Yeah, it's just like, oh, this is the flip side of the werewolf or whatever it is.
Yeah, this is the first time we've seen a card where it's like, listen, it has two sides, and when you play it, you can choose either side. You don't have to chip, you know, do the instant side and then somehow get it flipped over or something.
Right.
This is like, okay, in a certain situations, I want to give creatures my opponent's control -2/-0. I'm going to cast that as an instant. But if it's turn two and I don't have another land drop, then never mind. I'm just going to play this as the land side, the Baine Coast side, and then it's just a land that comes into play tapped. We're going to talk about sort of the power of that flexibility probably throughout this episode, but seems pretty simple on its surface, right?
Yeah, very simple in just like telling you about it. It's a card that you can choose what side to play when you play it. However, in Magic, there are so many little corner cases and things that care about the card, CMCs, what kind of card it is. So we're going to break all of that down today, as well as go through each of the colors and what cards are Modal Double Face cards in those colors, and do a little bit of a sort of a mini set review for them.
And yeah, we didn't mention any of these in our normal set review. We were saving them for this episode. So we'll do kind of a look at the cards, the Modal Double Face cards that we think are going to sort of be playable in Commander as we go through this process of explaining sort of how they work as well.
But this is cool, though, because I think for Commander players, these are very interesting. There are new ways to play lands, and like we always say, Magic lands are some of the most important cards in the game, and now you're getting ways to do it in a way that gives you a little more flexibility, which is great.
All right, so we're going to go through some rules stuff first here and make sure that everybody's on the same page about how these work. The first rule note, I guess, is that each double face card has an icon in the top left corner of each face. For Modal Double Face cards in this set, these icons are a single triangle for the front face and a double triangle for the back face. These icons have no effect on gameplay. So if you're watching the YouTube video right now, if you look at Baine Veil, and then simultaneously we'll show the backside at the same time here, Baine Coast. You can see Baine Veil has one triangle in the top left, and Baine Coast has two triangles in the top left. That's only to tell you which is supposed to be the front face. The front face matters for certain other interactions with other cards.
Also, when you're like reshuffling your deck back up, you, for instance, took it out of a sleeve, you need to make sure it goes back into that side as well.
Right. So except for the ones that are lands on both sides, the front side is always the spell side. So in all cases, again, besides the ones that are lands on both sides, if it's a spell on one side, that's going to be the front side.
Mm-hmm. And it could be a sorcery, it could be a creature, it could be an instant. I think that's all that they have.
Is there enchantment?
There might
be. I don't know.
I don't think so. Yeah, we just have creatures, instants, and sorceries right now for the spell side.
Okay, so the next sort of rule point is a double face card's color identity is determined by the mana costs and mana symbols in the rules text of both faces combined. If either face has a color indicator or basic land type, those are also considered. So this is similar to how double face cards have worked previously.
Yep. However, in this case, because a lot of these are lands on both sides or on one side, the CMC is not going to be added up because it's just zero in this case. But for instance, let's say a land has a white symbol on one side and blue on the other side. You can't play that in a deck that does not have blue and commander, if that makes sense, because both sides of the cards are considered for color identity.
Just like the double-faced Avacyn is red and white.
Right.
That's similar to how these cards work. The color identity-wise, basically the same as previous double-faced cards.
Okay, next rules note. Each face of a double-faced card has its own set of characteristics, names, types, subtypes, abilities, and so on. While a double-faced card is on the stack or battlefield, consider only the characteristics of the face that is currently up. The other set of characteristics is ignored.
So once you cast Baying Veil as an instant that says creatures your opponents control get -2/-0 until end of turn, from that point, it's on the stack and it is now an instant.
Yep. You do not consider the land part of it. If it says if there's something that affects lands, that does not get affected. Obviously, you cannot cast a land either. So on the stack, this cannot be a land. It has to be Baying Veil the instant.
Now, if you play the land side and enters the battlefield as a land, you can't then interact with the instant side of the card. Again, only the land side matters. Like if you, well, let's take one that was a creature on one side and a land on the other.
Right.
You play the land side, and now it's on the battlefield. It is only considered a land. If you had a card that said destroy target creature, you can't point it at the land just because there's a creature on the other side. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the moment it leaves your hand and you essentially say, this is what I intend to do with this card, because that's your choice to cast it as a spell or play it as a land, that's what it becomes on the stack.
Okay.
And lands don't use the stack, so that's also sort of how to make sure that this does not create a massive rules complicated situation.
Right, you don't want to be negating their land play. Right? You know? Yeah. All right, the next rules point is to determine whether it is legal to play a modal double face card, consider only the characteristics of the face you're playing and ignore the other face's characteristics. For example, you can cast Baying Veil if you've already played a land for the turn, right? It doesn't cast, doesn't count as your land draw for turn, even though there's a land on one side of it. And you could play Baying Coast, the land side of it, even if there's an effect in place that stops you from casting instant spells.
Yeah. So again, this is the same idea as sort of the last rule, which is when you play or cast this card, if someone's like, oh, players can't cast more than one spell this turn, you can still play Baying Coast as a land because it does not count as a spell, if that makes sense. Let's see if you've already cast something that turn.
Yep.
Right. Next up, in hand, graveyard, library, or exile, modal double face cards have the characteristics of the front face only. And
so
that's
this is
face.
When they're not on the stack,
yes.
Not in play. Now they are just considered the front face, the instant side, the non-land side, except for, again, the cards that are lands on both sides.
Yeah, so that's in your hand, in your graveyard, in your library, or in exile. Basically, the backside of it does not exist. It's just the front side.
So the example here is if you have an effect that's searching your library for a land card, you know, to put it into play.
Right. Or like if someone's scrying or something. Yeah.
You can't find a modal double-faced card whose front face isn't a land. So you could not find Baying Veil with an expedition map.
Yep, because it is just an instant when it's anywhere but the battlefield or when you decide to play it, basically.
Now, this gets slightly complicated, though, because there's going to be another rules point which we're going to talk about next, which will seem to contradict this in some ways. So here it is. If an effect allows you to play, important, specifically play, a specific modal double-faced card, you may cast it as a spell or play it as a land as determined by which face you choose to play. If an effect allows you to cast, rather than play, a specific modal double-faced card, you cannot play it as a land. So the important word to look for on other cards that maybe are affecting this is the word play.
Yes, play versus cast. You can play a land, you cannot cast a land.
Right, so Crucible of Worlds, the biggest winner from Zendikar Rising, the card we're talking about constantly in all the set reviews, Crucible of Worlds allows you to play lands from your graveyard, right? And that means you can play the card, the modal double-faced cards, even if it's not the front side. Ramana Excavator and Muldrotha also fit this bill. So that means Baying Veil, you cast it, gave all your opponent's creatures -2/-0 until end of turn, and it's sitting in your graveyard. We know that the earlier thing said, well, in my graveyard, it's only the front-facing side. But Crucible allows you to play lands from your graveyard.
Yes.
It allows you to play the land side only of being Coast, not being Veil.
Yep, because when you're looking at it in your graveyard, you can, again, when you, it's as though it's in your hand, right? Yep. You can play this card from your hand and you can choose what it is. So if it's in your graveyard as Bane Veil, Crucible of the World sees it and says, well, you can actually do both of it. So this does count as playing a land because it is a land on the other side. It's a little complicated, but the big differentiator is just play versus cast.
But because Crucible of the World says you can play lands from your graveyard, you cannot play the instant side of Bane Veil. This is the part that gets a little bit interesting and tough for people
to
understand.
Yeah, you can't cast the spell side of it. You can only play the land side of it, which is a little interesting. It's tough to understand.
Okay, so similarly, there are cards that allow you to play the top card of your library if they meet a certain characteristic. So Courser of Crucifix allows you to play the land side off the top of your library, again, even if it's not the front side. So Bane Veil now is the top card of your library. Jimmy, you have a Courser of Crucifix. Makes you reveal the top card of your library, and you may play that card if it's a land.
Yes, and if this technically is a land, but however, it's only a land on its backside, I can't cast Bane Veil off Courser of Crucifix, but I can say, okay, I'm going to play that, choosing to have it enter the battlefield as the backside, as the mold double-faced card, as the Bane Coast, and it comes into play tapped.
Yep.
And again, the life.
Now, if an effect allows you to cast an instant spell from your graveyard, you could cast Bane Veil from your graveyard, but you couldn't choose to play it as a land instead.
Yeah, you can't snap cast your mage, choose Bane Veil, and have it enter as a land. You can only cast it as an instant at that point.
Because again, you cannot cast lands.
Yes.
So if a card allowed you to play an instant off the top of your library, or sorry, cast an instant off the top of your library, same thing, you wouldn't be able to play the land side.
Yeah, so again, the big word here is that you can play lands, you cannot cast them as lands. They're not spells, they don't use the stack. As a result, a Moldo double-faced cards, which count as both, when it's legally able to be played, then you can choose. You're like, all right, I'm going to play it as a land. It's a little complicated.
But that is how it works. Sense. Okay. Yeah. All right. The next, you want to read the next rules point?
If an effect puts a double-faced card onto the battlefield, it enters with its front face up. If that front face can't be put onto the battlefield, it doesn't enter the battlefield.
So, for example, if an effect exiles Bane Veil and returns it to the battlefield, let's say Ghostly Flicker when it's on the land side, Bane Coast.
Yeah.
So you Ghostly Flicker, it exiles, and then it returns it to the battlefield. It's going to try and return it to the front-facing side, which is an instant side. So you can't return an instant to the battlefield.
Yeah. It just remains in exile. Yep. Because when it comes back, and this is the same with the flip Planeswalkers and any of those other cards, when you exile or flicker those cards, they don't come back on their flip side.
Yep. They come back on their front side only, and then it says, well, this is not a legal thing to come back because it's not a permanent. So it just remains in exile.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a way, you know, maybe to deal with some Moto Double Face cards in some instances.
Yeah, finding a way to bounce it or flicker it or whatever it is.
Yeah, so this is also a way, though, to quote-unquote break these cards, right? Because some are creatures or permanents on the front side, in which case, if you played it as land and later could Ghostly Flicker it, you could get it into the battlefield without paying its mana cost, sort of, right? To the front side, you could sort of flip it back over.
Yeah.
Yeah. There aren't any modal double face cards that are sort of broken on their front facing permanent sides. I think they were careful about this.
Yeah, to not have it so busted that like it's a 10 mana creature spell. Yeah. It's like, easy, I'll play it as a land and then flicker it for 3 mana.
Yeah, then Aminatu it, right?
Yeah.
Flicker lands or Ghostly Flicker is another good one. So there's not a good incentive to try and break it in that way.
Yeah.
I think they were aware of it, which
it's good. Still cute and you definitely can still do it and you'll get some value off it. If you know, I'm sure in some corner cases it's like, oh wow, that was really awesome, but it's not like a break the game.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have allowed you to do that.
All right, you want to read the next one?
Yeah. Okay, the converted mana cost of a Moldo double face card is based on the characteristics of the face that is being considered. So it's on the stack on the battlefield, consider whichever face is up. In all other zones, consider only the front face. And this is different than how the converted mana cost of a transforming double face card is determined.
So this comes up because specifically like Yuriko cares about, you know, you reveal cards off the top of your library and then deal that much damage to each of your opponents off Yuriko's trigger.
To the converted mana cost, yeah.
Yeah, so if you reveal, and some of these do have high CMC, a high CMC card, it will deal that much damage, even though you're like, okay, then I put that in my hand and play it as my land for turn, which makes some of these pretty good, specifically in Yuriko.
Because
you get the upside of being able to do a lot of damage to everybody without the downside of, like, that card is stranded in my hand now because I can't cast it. Yeah. So that's pretty interesting.
Same with Yennet, Cryptic Sovereign. Who cares about what the CMC is of the top card of your deck?
Okay, we only have a couple more rules points here. The next one is a modal double-faced card can't be transformed or put onto the battlefield transformed. So ignore any instruction to transform a modal double-faced card or put it onto the battlefield transformed.
Yeah, transformed does not apply to modal DFCs. In this case, these are just cards that have the ability for you to cast or play either side. They're not like, transform this card by flipping it over and meeting a certain condition.
Yeah, just because the physical act of taking the card and putting its front or its backside up is similar doesn't mean they act as if they are transformed cards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And then the last sort of bullet point rule thing here we're going to talk about is if an effect instructs a player to choose a card name, like a Nevermore type effect, the name of either face may be chosen.
Mm-hmm.
If that effect or a linked ability refers to a spell with the chosen name being cast and or a land with the chosen name being played, it considers only the chosen name, not the other face's name. So if you choose a card name, say this card can't be cast and it's Baying Vale, I can still play Baying Coast as my land.
You just can't cast Baying Vale.
Right.
So they've sort of limited you to the one side of the card that does not have the name that you named.
Right.
Yeah, this card is not called, you wouldn't say like, you can't cast Baying Vale / Baying Coast. You can only name one side of it, sort of like with your spyglasses and all that.
Okay, so here's a question a lot of people are asking. How does Ixodron work with modal double-faced cards? One of your favorite cards, Jimmy.
Yeah, this card's great. Let's read Ixodron. 3BB for a star creature illusion. As Ixodron enters the battlefield, turn all other non-token creatures face down. They are 2/2 creatures. Ixodron's power and toughness are each equal to the number of face-down creatures on the battlefield. Great with that sort of anamorph deck that I played on Game Nets a long time ago. But how does it work if it's a creature that all of a sudden when you turn it upside down, there's a land on the other side?
Right. So a lot of people are like, does this, you know, turn all these creatures into lands for my opponents and they're just kind of stuck there.
Yeah.
So it's similar to what we were saying about transform cards. Although the physical action is the same, transforming is not the same as being turned face down. So double face cards are always face up. They are never face down. And if in effect tries to turn a double face card face down, nothing happens. So Ixodron will not flip.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a thing. You should play all the creatures that are MDFCs and then play Ixodron and be like, none of my stuff flips because it can't.
Yeah, it seems a little cute.
Magical Christmas? Yeah,
definitely cute.
Okay, let's talk about the... So that's all the rules we're going to go over here. There's an article from Wizards of the Coast, which we'll link in the show notes. It goes a little bit more on depth.
Yep.
But let's talk about the actual cards here, the specific cards. We're going to start with the cycle? There's six of them.
Yeah, it's
still a cycle, right?
It's interesting because they have three ally pairs and three enemy pairs of these special lands. But these are sort of the hallmark, oh my gosh, look at these commander players. These are really interesting, I think.
There's actually six of every color, too, so that maybe it's something with like the way you print the sheets where they need certain amounts. I don't know. Anyway, there are six of lands that are lands on both sides. And what they are is a monocolor land on one side and a monocolor land on the other side.
They're rare. They do not enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah, the untapped thing is really great. But this is kind of, these are choice lands, right? You choose at the time you play it which side is going to be face up, and then that side's just going to be face up unless you can pull some weird trickery with Ghostly Flickers, Aminatu type stuff. Otherwise, it's not like a Guildgate or something that could tap for one of either color from then on out.
Yeah.
But there is the upside that they are coming to play untapped. Let's read, I guess, one or two of these. Needle Verge Pathway is a land. It taps to add red mana. That's the front face. The back face, which is triangle, triangle, that's how we know it's the back face, is called Pillar Verge Pathway. That's a land that taps for white mana. So this is a Boros choice land.
Yep, and there's going to be a Boros one, a Izzet, a Orzhov, as well as Gruul, and Dimir, and then finally, Selesnya.
Hey, good job.
Oh, gosh, my brain... was like, oh no, why did I start doing this? The pattern that they made these is they're all called pathways. So for instance, the one we just read, Needle Verge Pathway, Pillar Verge Pathway, they'll only change the first word in each. So Needle Verge to Pillar Verge, River Glide to Lava Glide, Bright Climb to Grim Climb. That's just an easier way of sort of understanding how they did the naming conventions. But overall, I mean, I think these are actually pretty sweet, just because there are a lot of times when you're drawing cards and you're like, crap, I wish this was a dual land because I actually need black instead of blue right now. Well, these lands give you that option of sort of filling in that slot, as well as not being traditional dual lands and costing a bajillion dollars, but potentially being a lot more accessible to players and helping smooth out their mana bases.
Yeah, I think these are probably better than like Guildgates and Refuge lands and lands that tap for different colors of mana. But come into play tapped.
Yeah.
And
not saying that you don't run those still, right? I think you still have a balance because obviously if you only have these kinds of lands, then you're going to miss out on some colors a lot of time.
Yeah, there's definitely some downside of these lands too, because I can play, let's say, the Gruul one and I choose the green side. And then two turns later, I realize, oh, I wish I had a little more red mana because I drew a forest in between now and then. But it's sort of stuck on that green side in most instances. And it's hard to sort of flip it back over. Whereas if you had a Guildgate in that same instance, yeah, it came into play tap that one turn. But from then on, I have access to both colors at all times. The untapped thing, though, does make it very powerful because Guildgates have that really big downside of like, oh man, I really need to draw my fifth mana so I can play my commander on time. And you draw it and you're like,
Guildgate.
It's a tap land.
Yeah. Oops.
So now I play it and I still can't play my five drop. I have to play a four drop or less.
And you have to wait three turn cycles before it gets back to you.
Right. Three other players. So if you've drawn one of these choice lands, then all of a sudden you can play it. It comes into play on tap. So it's similar to a basic land in that case. They don't have land types. They're not fetchable. So there's all these things to weigh when you're considering how good these are, because it's like, oh, Cultivates and Kodama's Reach can't go get these things. Fetch lands can't go get these things. But at the same time, they don't come into play tapped, and they do offer me flexibility that's above of a normal basic land, right? Like a mountain can't sometimes come into play as a plane.
True.
Which this can. I think like most decks that have a healthy amount of basic lands are going to want to put one or two of these in, though, because if you have, you know, unless you're taking out your one of your last like six basic lands, most of the time, having access to one of these choice lands in a basic land slot or two is just going to increase how smooth your game goes overall.
Yeah, and there aren't that many decks that are like, if you have X basic lands, then you're rewarded for this.
Right.
You know, like a lot of the mono red decks will play the lens that allows the extra planar lens.
Yeah.
But in that case, you know, that's a little different because that's a monocolor deck and these are all double colored. So for the most part, you're right. If you have a lot of basics in there, you're very rarely going to be like, oh, shucks, wish I had that basic in there, unless your deck is mono, just Evolving Wilds.
Unless somebody played Blood Moon or Back to Basics.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time you're like, great, this is awesome. It gives me access to blue right now. And that's what I want. Whereas if I drew my other basic land of the other color. So yeah, I can see, I think I'm probably switching out some basics in all of my decks just about that are three color or more, maybe some two color. Actually, two color decks have a lot of basics, so I'm probably switching out at least one of them for the one that fits. Obviously, we don't have the last four of these, but we're anticipating that we're going to have the full cycle by the end of the next couple of sets. They've said they're going to be doing more of these MDFCs.
Which is
alert.
Exciting, by the way. And I'm interested to see as well. This definitely requires some testing to see exactly how well they flow in your decks. And if it's like, you know what? Actually, in a three color deck, you rarely want to run these or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely in two color and... Well, definitely two color.
Yeah.
There are two color.
I think most three colors, as long as you have like above 10 basic lands, at least one of the basic lands switching out for one of these is going to be good, and probably two.
Yeah. I mean, most excitingly, I think this just makes land bases slightly more accessible. Again, more lands in this world. They're not like full on functional reprints of the dual lands, but they are interesting. And of course, they give us an entire episode because now there are different things you can do with them.
All right. Now let's talk about the cards by color here. We're going to go in the opposite order that we did the set review, so everybody
exciting.
Gets their due. So we're going to start with blue.
The best color, apparently.
This time. there are six MDFCs in each color, but we're not going to talk about all of them. We're going to talk about probably four or five in each color.
Yeah, the best ones. A lot of them are also, you know, sort of like the made for the limited environment more so. And so we're going to talk about the ones that we think impact Commander the most. Each color does have one modal DFC that is a mythic that is on a spell on one side and a land on the other. And these are different because these are the only ones that give you the ability on the other side to come into play untapped, but you have to pay three life. So they're like a lightning bolt, a bolt land.
Yeah.
Not a shock land.
Bolt land.
But they only tap for one mana. But the upside is that the other side is a powerful mythic spell, usually.
Right. So there's three, basically, types of MDFCs. The lands on both sides, and those tap for a single color coming untapped. Then there are the mythic rares, one for each color, and those have a spell on one side, and then a land on the other that can come into play untapped if you pay three life. And then all the other ones, they're a spell on one side and a land on the other side that must come into play tapped.
Yep, and those rare from rare to uncommon to, I believe, commons.
Are there commons?
Yeah, I think so, but we're not going to mention them.
Okay.
The nice thing, though, is that they did say that in every single Zendikar Rising booster pack, there is going to be at least one Modal Double Face card. So it could be a mythic, it could be a rare, it could be an uncommon.
And they're really good in draft, spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. Absurd. It's like, hey, I can suddenly play 15 lands in my draft deck and not feel too bad about it.
And crazy. Simultaneously play 27 spells.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so let's start off with the mythic rare from blue, Jimmy.
All right. It is Seagate Restoration. The Seagate, very important in the Zendikar world. It's 4 blue for a sorcery. Draw cards equal to the number of cards in your hand, plus one. You have no maximum hand size for the rest of the game. So this is a 7-mana sort of Windfall-esque, but also, you know, now you don't have any hand size restrictions.
And you don't discard the cards in your hand. You just draw.
Yeah.
You just double your hand size.
Yep.
Yeah, 7 mana is a lot. And then the other side, of course, is Seagate Reborn, which is a land, and it enters the battlefield untapped if you pay 3 life, and it taps for blue.
Yep.
If you don't pay 3 life, it enters the battlefield tapped. Remember, you don't have to pay the 3 life if you don't have
the use of the mana.
There's often a turn where you're like, oh, I have a 4-drop and no 5-drop. I'm going to play this land tapped and play my 4-drop, which would be the same because if I played an untapped land, I would still only use 4 mana. So, yeah.
And in this case, too, it's like, I don't have another land in my hand. I have to hit a land drop. Okay, fine. I don't need the spell side of this. And the spell side of it is definitely overcosted. I think 7 mana for that effect is pretty high up there. But that doesn't mean that's a bad card because Yuriko players around the world all screamed and rejoiced when they saw this. This is a 7-mana card you can flip off the top of your library with Yuriko's trigger, deal 7 damage to everyone, and then at that point you decide if you need to cast it later on in the game or just play it as a land.
You're almost certainly playing as a land most times, but it's totally worth it because it did 3 damage to you, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
And 7 damage to each of your opponents, so you'll take it.
Yeah. One of the big cards that we're probably going to mention a few times is Kefnet the Mindful, or any card that says you can return a land to your hand. Kefnet does that for 3 in the blue. You draw, and then you may return a land you control to its owner's hand, so you can rebuy these DFCs for later on if you want to cast their spell side.
Very powerful because you use this as a land early. And spoiler alert, you should basically never hold these cards.
Yeah, especially the really expensive ones.
If you're
going to
miss a land drop, right?
Yeah.
If
totally.
You're going to miss a land drop, then play these as a land every single time. And definitely play them as a land if you have that efficiency I was talking about where I can't use my mana. Otherwise, this is going to come into play tapped. So use your tap land in that case where it's not going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
But very powerful to just bounce it back to your hand later with something like Kefnet and replay it as a spell.
Yeah, and I think 7 mana is still, again, very much on the top side, so I would see this being more on the casual sides of things, unless you're able to ramp out to that 7 mana pretty quickly, I think.
I mean, it's the flexibility is just a huge thing. It doesn't cost you that much to play it as a land in your deck, and you're basically saying, like, it's going to be a land 90% of the time that I play it. But 10% of the time, I'm going to activate that other thing and do something really cool with it.
Yeah, draw a ton of cards. Yep. Even if it's like, crap, I need to, you know, refill my hand. I only have a few cards in here.
Yeah, I'm in Locust God, and it's going to give me, you know, 20 Locusts, and that's going to be pretty sweet and probably allow me to win the game. Or, you know, Yennet is another card we're going to mention here because it's odd CMC. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to maybe flip it off the top of my library and cast it for free. But if I draw it at another point in time and I'm not using Yennet, then all of a sudden I can just play it as land, and it was a huge CMC spell.
Yeah, actually really good in Yennet.
Yeah.
You can cast it for free.
All the wheel decks, you know, this is a type of deck that I think you consider, right? Because you're already getting bonuses off of drawing a lot of cards in those decks.
Yep. And then there's also, of course, the sort of classic Laboratory Maniac, Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, and Thassa's Oracle. This is the kind of card that lets you win the game typically, sort of draw out the rest of your deck. You have a ton of cards in your hand, whatever it is. You're going to draw that last card as though it wasn't there, and then those cards will trigger their abilities, and boom, you win the game.
Yeah, I can see that going in all those decks. It might even say just have a home in the CDH decks just because of that. Not that like it's normally going to be used as that, but just most of the time I'm going to play it as land, but 1 out of 100 games, this might win me the game in a spot. I mean,
yeah, and in CDH too, like a 3 life loss is not significant, I don't think.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
They usually don't die to life loss like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Jimmy. Is this card playable with no synergies in your deck? So it's not a Yennet deck. It's not a Yuriko deck. It's not a Wheel deck. You're not playing Labman, Thassa's Oracle. What I mean is, if it's just as a card that you expect to play, you know, 95 times out of 100 as a land that's either tapped or untapped for 3 life, do you think Seagate Restoration is playable?
I think yes. And a lot of it also does depend on whether or not the three life loss is going to be significant. If you're a deck that's just like always going to be losing tons of life, whether or not you just have endless shock lands or whatever it is, then the three life on the backside feels a little rougher. But for the most part, like, I can't see why you wouldn't slot this into so many different blue decks. It just gives you the option at seven mana potentially to draw a bunch of cards and get you back into the game. I've known plenty of situations where I look at my hand, I go, well, these are cards that are all playable, but they don't do anything about the current situation. I guess I'll pass turn and hold up some activated abilities. Ooh, feels bad.
Or any games where you're top decking. This is a great top deck, right? Later in the game. It's much better than just a land.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
at the very least, it cycles and you get more cards out of it. You get two cards, you know, or whatever. How many cards you have in your hand? Like, let's say you have like three lands.
True. You have to have a card in your hand. So not top decking, but like you've got one land in your hand.
Yeah, you're like sitting there, you're like, crap, I've just got useless spells or just a few cards I don't need. Okay, let's use this here and just get back a little bit.
Right, top decking, bad example. But late in the game, when, like you said, a lot of your cards or some of your cards maybe are useless on the current board. Yeah, that's going to be the interesting thing with all these cards, right? Because we just said this card could go in any deck with blue, right? Like, and it wouldn't be embarrassing because just playing a land that's going to come into play tap sometimes and sometimes cost you three life is not the worst. And the fact that there is a real upside to having a spell on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly not embarrassing. That's for sure.
Okay. Let's go on to the next card, which is the rare. There's one rare and one mythic. The rare is basically the same as the uncommons, though.
Yep.
As far as how it works.
So this is Glasspool Mimic on one side and Glasspool Shore on the other. The Mimic is 2 and a blue for a creature, shapeshifter, rogue, 0/0. You may have Glasspool Mimic enter the battlefield as a copy of a creature you control, except it's a shapeshifter rogue in addition to its other types. And on the other end, Glasspool Shore enters the battlefield tapped, and it taps for a blue mana.
So you can only clone your own creatures. That's important to know. You can't clone your opponent's creatures.
Yep, but it's a 3-mana clone, which means it's on the cheaper side of clones typically, and it becomes a land otherwise.
And the land here has to come into play tapped, which I think is a significant downside.
Yes.
And now we're getting into the realm of, like, I don't know that you want to replace basic lands with lands that must come into play tapped. But this is a pretty significant upside. I would say you're more likely to cast the front side of this than Seagate Restoration in most decks.
100%. Yeah. Not to mention if you're a deck that has, you know, a bunch of Enter the Battlefield effects, this is pretty nice.
How many creatures do you need in your deck before you're considering Glasspool Mimic?
25, 20. Not even that many, I don't think.
So a creature, yeah, I would agree. Somewhere around 20. So any deck that has 20 creatures and is in blue is a candidate to run this card. That's pretty strong, and I think the upside of this is good enough that, yes, it comes to play tapped on the other side, but I think I'm playing it in a lot of decks.
I mean, just having a clone effect in general can be really useful, even if it's as basic as, shoot, I need one more Thopter to block this massive threat that's coming in, or like, he has Menace, I just need a blocker. So,
or I just, cast it on my Sakura Tribe Elder.
Yeah.
You have
a commander, so you always know you have at least access to one creature in your deck.
Well, yeah, but it's legendary, so you might not want to clone it.
True, that's a good point. good call.
Okay, the next one is Jwari Disruption. That's 1 and a blue for an instant counter-target spell unless its controller pays one, and the other side is Jwari Ruins, which is actually the animation behind us, which is an enter the battlefield, tap land, and taps for a blue.
This one kind of is booty. It's not that great. Countering a spell unless its controller pays one is only going to be relevant on turns sort of like 1, 2, 3.
I don't know. I think this card is actually pretty good. I think narrow cards are good on these because it's very easy to play the land side in most games. But when this works, it might save you the game. Like, there's very often where, like, you've got plenty of land drops, you're just holding this in your hand, and it's not like normal force spikes, which are, this is never going to be good.
Right.
Well, then I just play it as a land side. But in the situation where somebody goes off and just has, you know, they cast exactly
that last
4
like,
mana
thing,
for Smothering Tithe, then you're like, nope, that's pretty good. I don't know. See, this is where it starts to get hard to evaluate these
maybe
cards.
Maybe this card works if you're not necessarily replacing a land with it, because that's going to be something we talk about later. Is if you play these, can you replace your basic land slots for more spells? So now instead of running 37 lands, you're running 35 with 2 modal DFCs. I don't know if you want to necessarily with Jwari Disruption, but it could be, you know, you are right. There are a lot of times, and I've done this too, where it's like, yeah, I'll just tap out. I've got perfect mana for this. Feels great. I'm going to pay exactly what I need to cast these things, not anticipating a pay an extra mana and counter it.
That will counter a lot more things than you think. The Mana Tithe, which is the white one, always gets people, partially because you're in white, they don't expect it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think this card is playable, and in decks that don't have 20 plus creatures, maybe it takes the place of what of the land that Glass Pool Mimic would replace.
Yeah, I mean, and if you have the ability to buy back, if it's an instant and Sorceries Matters deck, sort of like this next card, which is Salundi Vision on one side and Salundi Isle on the other. Salundi Vision is 2 and a blue for an instant. Look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal an instant or sorcery card from among them and put it into your hand and put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And of course, on the other end, just a enters the battlefield land that taps for blue mana.
Again, all these lands come into play at battlefield tapped except the mythic, which costs 3 life. Yep. Okay, so this can get you an instant or sorcery off the top 6 cards of your library. Your best instant or sorcery off the top 6. It's an instant, costs 2 and a blue. That's actually decent.
Yeah, it's but maybe like 1 mana overcosted, I would say. Yeah. But it's also a land on the other side. I think this card is way more playable than Jawari Disruption, just because it draws you a card at the end of the day. You get some card selection, but it needs to be in an instance and matters, Sorceries Matters deck.
That's what I was going to say, right? So Glasspool Mimic is kind of a card I would put if you've got 20 or more creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Salundi Vision is a card I would put where I have 20 to 25 instants or sorceries in my deck.
Yeah.
If I don't meet those two, then maybe Jawari Disruption. Because I think running one of these in place of one of your islands is not...
Oh, you're not losing out on
you're only
any
gaining. You're, yeah. Right? You're gaining this additional thing that you're going to use sometimes, and you're not
yeah.
losing much from this one tapped land. Now, once we add in more colors and we're considering, you know, oh, I can have a green one of these or a red one of these or a blue one of these, now it starts messing with that calculation. But I think Salundi Vision is actually quite a good card in a lot of decks anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, people play Search for Ezcanta, which has this ability as one of its on when it flips to a land side, and it's in control decks and decks that just need to make sure that they always have gas, especially because it's an instant. This is, I'd say, very playable, but has to be sort of in your Riel the Everwise or your Adelez the Cinderwind, your Nabon Dean of Iterations sort of type decks, mm-hmm. your Mizzixes, all that stuff.
All your Wizard Tribal decks.
All your Wizard Tribal decks, which of which there will be many now.
Yeah, there already are a lot, and there's going to be more because it's Strixhaven.
Yeah, it's coming up soon.
All right, we got the rest of the colors to go through. There's a lot of cards left to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hey, I'm Nolan Sykes, a host of Past Gas, the number one automotive podcast in the world. Every week, my co-hosts, James Pumphrey, Joe Weber, and I bring you some of our favorite stories from the hallowed halls of car history. From the amazing, to the weird, to the utterly unforgettable moments, we cover it all. Join us as we take a look at the wild stories and larger-than-life characters behind legendary cars and car makers. So if you love cars or just like a good story, check out Past Gas by Donut Media, the number one automotive podcast in the world.
All right, we are back, and we are talking about the Modal Double-Faced Cards, the brand new mechanic that is introduced in Zendikar Rising. We just did blue, we talked about some of the rules things, and now we're going to cover the rest of the colors, starting with green. This one's a fun one.
So this is the mythic rare from green. It's called Turn Timber Symbiosis. 4 green, green, green. 7 mana for sorcery. Look at the top 7 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. If that card has converted mana cost 3 or less, it enters the battlefield with 3 additional +1/+1 counters on it. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. And again, remember the mythic rares all flip over, or sorry, all have the other side that is land and says it enters the battlefield. You may pay 3 life. If you don't, it enters the battlefield tapped. And this one taps for a green. So this is possibly an untapped land for 3 life, a bolt land, as you called it. The front side, look at the top 7 cards, put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield. This is cheating of mana cost potentially. And it even gives you kind of like a, like a rebate or like a hey, I'm sorry gift of like...
Because it's only CMC 3 or less.
Yeah, if you got a small creature, CMC 3 or less, it's like, well, we'll put 3+1/+1 yeah, counters on that
thing. It's a little
thing.
Bigger on
yeah.
it. Yeah, this is it, the first part of it. You're like, yes, yes, yes. And you're like, wait, CMC 3 or less, a little less so. However, Collected Company and all those types of cards are very powerful for good reason. There are lots of haymakers that are 3 CMC or less.
You can get Kozilek off of this thing. You can get, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'd say definitely you just want to... You want to play this in like a Maelstrom Wanderer deck because you cast Maelstrom Wanderer and then all of a sudden you have, all of this, holy moly, a bunch of stuff going on there. So I would say this is also really good in sort of like your Savala deck, or you can even cast Savala off of this, which is kind of funny.
Interesting.
And you get Savala out and then boom, you get, you know.
It would have to be on top of your deck somehow.
Yeah. Omneth, Locus of Mana, because I think 7 mana is just a lot. So sort of in those big mana green decks, I could see this just having a lot of... And again, Omneth is another card that you could cast off turn Timber, and it cuts +1/+1 on top of the unspent green mana you have, which is interesting.
Xenagos, God of Revels, has a lot of big haymakers. Xenagos is already giving things haste, so this is something that you could draw and get you a really big creature, because it's better than like a generic 7 CMC creature sometimes, in that you look at so many cards, you can pick a really good one.
Yeah, at least you're picking the one that has the most value. And in general, like, I think just anytime you're playing big mana type decks, this is going to be a card that is going to be fun.
Same question. If you have a deck and it has 20 plus creatures in it, is this just playable in it, just like the Seagate Restoration, the blue one?
This definitely seems playable. You, again, have to watch the CMCs because it's CMC 3 or less, so you just have to make sure
No, you get any creature. If it's three or less, you get 3
+1/+1 counters
on it.
So, I mean, yeah. I think this is definitely... you would want to play it in the one that, like, in Ashlyn's, like, Eldrazi green deck.
You want to have the chance to hit a 9 or 10 drop.
Yeah, you want to hit the big ones, and if it's the small ones, yeah, sure, you still get a bunch of benefit from it, but at least you get whatever you want.
I mean, let's say there's a deck that has 20 plus creatures, but they're all 5 CMC or less. Do you not play this card?
No, I think you still play it because it could be a land. It could just be a land. Every single time it's like, do you play? It's like, well, can it be a land?
Yes.
Yeah, all right, fine. I'll take it.
Yeah, it just seems like very playable in a lot of decks. All you need to beat the threshold of, do you have at least 20 creatures?
Yeah.
Or so, yeah. All right, let's talk about the next
one. Good job, Turn Timber. That might be my favorite one. It's just the classic green.
It might be the second best. Man, they're all good.
Yeah, they are all good.
Okay, all the mythics, I mean.
Yeah. Next up is Khazandu Mammoth. 1 green for a 3/3 creature elephant with landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, Khazandu Mammoth gets +2/+2 until end of turn. And on the other end, it's just a tap land that adds a green mana. Not excited about this one.
This is a 3 mana 3/3, and it landfalls, becomes a 5/5. It's not the type of card in Commander that we would normally play, right? Because we don't care that much about a 3 mana 3/3, even though that's mildly efficient. And honestly, it's going to be a 5/5 turn 4, 5, and 6 probably, at least, right? Sometimes a 7/7 because if you have fetch lands and things.
Yeah, if you're playing like a Xenagos deck and you want to just pump up creatures, or you know, in any red-green deck where maybe you can drop 3 lands a turn, this becomes massive. But it doesn't have trample. It's not a fantastic synergy with a lot of Commander decks just off the top of our heads. I think you wrote down maybe cares about 4 power or greater decks, of which there have been a few these days. But
because that's like, there's decks, I put down equipment decks too, and that was one of the things I really liked about the creatures in this modal double face card thing, is that, you know, one of the problems you run into when building an equipment deck is you want equipment and you want creatures to put them on, because what you don't want ever to have happen is, I drew a bunch of creatures but no equipment, or I drew a bunch of equipment but no creatures.
Right.
So anything that fills the role of like, hey, this sometimes can be a creature, but it also sometimes can be a land, so it takes a land slot.
Oh, interesting.
So it ups your creature count without upping the number of non-land cards you have in your deck, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is a spot where I might think about playing something like that. Even like a Selvala deck maybe would think about this, right? It doesn't. The competitive ones don't want tap lands, which is a big knock on this, but are there more casual Selvala decks? I was just about to say that. I don't know that there are.
I mean, not to any player at the table that sees it and goes, right. Wait, nah, I'm getting rid of that. I don't care.
Well, anyway, if you're hurting for a creature, this is the fact that it, you know, when you put it in your deck, you're saying 95% of the time, I'm going to play this as a land.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I'm going to just be in need of a creature, and this will meet that criteria.
Yeah, I'm not too stoked on this one just because it doesn't give you the ability to have it enter the battlefield untapped.
Yeah.
But again, if you're just wanting to put this in a green deck, I can't really fault you for it. It is a land a lot of the times.
Yeah. Depending on how many lands you already have that come into play tapped, if it's not too many, this could make your deck better, almost any green deck better, just by having a thing that's a creature sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the next one, which is Kalni Ambush. 2 and a green for an instant. Target creature you control fights target creature you don't control. And it's a land that enters the battlefield tapped and taps for green on the other side.
Hey.
This is a fight spell.
Could be a removal spell.
Yep.
Really good in Nyeth of the Dire Hunt because that cares about creatures
fight
that
tribal.
Fight. Yeah. I think this is very playable just because in green decks you're likely to have your Khazandu Mammoths, the bigger cards that are going to come out. And when they smack something, it's a one set removal spell. And that's sort of like green's way of removing cards in mono green decks and all that. So I'm kind of a fan of this.
Yeah, I think you need to meet some criteria, like you have to have enough creatures, and generally you want those creatures to be big, right?
Yeah.
But given that that is the case, and a lot of green decks that is, this is a removal spell that's also on a land. I mean, we're going to say the same things over and over again. The downside of having this in your deck is not huge.
Yeah, I think it really just comes down for this mold of DFCs is which card do you want to put in your deck and which one can you afford putting in your deck? Because you're going to, again, like if you're in a green, red, white deck, there's a lot of choices. So you're going to want to find the ones that fit your strategy the best. And this one, I think, in general, generically, not bad as long as you have creatures that can fight and won't die doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you have like a Death Touch deck.
There you go. All right, the next one is Balaged Recovery. It's 2 and a green for a sorcery. It just says, return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
Regrowth.
And the other side is, again, the tap land that taps for green, Balaged Sanctuary.
You're a big regrowth fan.
Yeah, huge fan of regrowth. And I think regrowth for one extra mana, but the downside is I get a land on the other side. This is the default one for green, right? Like, if you're not running any modal double-faced cards in the deck, this will be good in your deck if you have green. And again, if you're replacing a basic land probably with it and you have enough other basics. Okay, a lot of ifs, but I can see this just sort of being like good enough to increase your deck by 0.05%. You know
well,
what I mean?
This and the next one, I think you could even play without having it replace a land just because it's like, hey, make sure you always hit your land drops. Now you have 39 lands in your deck.
That's a really good point. Like take the regrowth or even maybe the Eternal Witness out, put this card in, and now you just hit your land drop more often. You have less games
where definitely you don't you could draw take your a regrowth out for this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Next one as well, because it is Tangled Florahedron. Oh, it's actually a Hedron that's become a little elemental. That's really cute. It's 1 and a green for a 1/1 that just taps to add a green mana. It's a mana dork. Yep. And on the back, it's just a land that enters the battlefield tapped. So this, straight up, you could replace a land for without even blinking an eye. Or you could just place it on top if you're a deck that just has lots of mana dorks.
Yeah, you could replace another 2-mana mana dork, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd want to, like, Birds of Paradise, Landwar Elves. Those are at a different place on the curve. But, yeah, this just seems... I think the regrowth is a little more... goes in every single deck.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, you're always going to want ramp. It's a signet. Signets go in basically every deck, right?
Yeah, it's elemental. There's a lot of elemental matters decks, especially the Omnath ones these days. So,
but you're like, oh, I have Farseek and this in my hand. I'm going to play this as my land for turn, cast my Farseek.
Yeah.
Boom. Like, that's great, right? Because if you have Farseek and Ramp Growth in your hand, you're not going to be able to play both.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you can with this. So, yeah.
Pretty good. Good job, Green.
Good job.
Overall, very solid solid cards across for their modal DFCs.
All right, let's talk about red here.
Okay, this one's actually really exciting. It's Shatter Skull Smashing, the Mythic of the Cycle for red. It's X red red for a sorcery. Shatter Skull Smashing deals X damage divided as you choose among up to 2 target creatures and or planeswalkers. If X is 6 or more, Shatter Skull Smashing deals twice X damage divided as you choose among them instead. And of course, the other end, it's a land that can come into play untapped for 3 life and taps for red mana. So for 8 mana. If you pay 6 red red, then you deal 12 damage divided amongst creatures as you choose, two creatures and or planeswalkers.
Well, some restrictions, right? Because it doubles the amount, so you can't do like 7 and 5, but...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, this is... I mean, again, it's a land that's in your deck that sometimes... Like, how many games have we been in on game nights, extra turns, where you're just like, can anybody kill that thing? Because that thing, Seedborne Muse, whatever, we're just going to lose. And you're like, oh, well, yeah, my land, I would normally wanted to play this as just a land, but yeah, I'll use it as a removal spell, I'll kill that and that, and then the game will continue and I won't lose.
Yeah, this is, I mean, the green one, it's a fight spell. This is red's version of it, which is direct damage. Also, divided among as you choose means you can do one damage to one thing and all the rest to another, so decks like Feather the Redeemed all of a sudden make this look really sweet because it targets Feather and doesn't kill it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You want to do
one there and five there, and then get it back to my hand.
Yeah,
that's great.
You might play this in your Fire Song and Sunspeaker deck
because
it gets lifelink all of a sudden. Yep. Yeah, and then Neheb the Eternal is the type of deck that can make this get a ton of mana and cast it for a huge amount. It doesn't target players, so it's just a little bit awkward there. But I think like the big mana decks, you even wrote your Tim deck even might want this.
Yeah, just because it creates so much mana. You know, often my Tim deck is like, tap this, untap that, tap this, untap that, tap this, untap that. I have 14 mana floating. Okay, well, I was going to play this as a land, but I'll just go ahead and cast it now.
Yeah, and now you're doing 28 damage or whatever, or however much it is, 24 divided amongst two creatures. You can definitely take out some big things.
And then early in the game where it doesn't look like I'm just going to play it as a land and then just go about my life, right? And it didn't change my deck much other than the upside of being able to kill two creatures at some point in the game.
Yeah.
All right, the next one is, I think it's clear, this mythic, just like the other two, I think basically playable in any deck that has red in it. It is double red for this effect, so maybe if you're not heavy red, you don't want it. But the other ones are triple of their color.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to cost you much in deck building to have it. So it's really just a case of, like, I don't think you play Seagate Restoration, Timber, what is the green one, whatever the green one is, and the red one all in the same deck. You just have to pick and choose what fits your deck better. But you... Man, it feels like most decks are going to want one of these mythics.
Yeah. And I think Shareskull is going to have a pretty big play in Historic Standard, all that. So
yeah.
It's pretty good.
All right. The next one is the red rare. It's 2 in a red for an instant. It's called Valakut Awakening. Put any number of cards from your hand on the bottom of your library, then draw that many cards plus 1.
This is just a mono red auto staple for the rest of time, I'm pretty sure.
Not just mono red. This is any red that any deck that has red in it up to 3 colors, right?
Yeah. Any of the wheel decks, the mana cost is only 2 in a red, so you can definitely cast it.
Yeah, just a Gruul deck just wants that, right? Like, I just would rather have different cards. Yeah, one of them's good, the other 3 are mediocre.
Replaces itself because it's that many plus 1, that's really solid.
Yeah, I mean, there is, again, a slight downside to a land that enters the battlefield tapped on the other side, but that's pretty low compared to the upside of this, which is... There's just so many games where you just look at your hand and you're like, I just don't have the right cards right now in this game.
Yeah, or like, I don't need a Mandork on turn 6. Just even that, like, right? Like, Valakut Awakening at instant.
It's an instant.
You could replace just one card with it, and it'll be worth it because you get, you know, you replace the card with it back. So
I love that card. That card's going in a lot of decks.
Yeah, especially all your wheel decks, like we talked about before. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. All right, next up is Kazool's Fury, 2 in a red for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, sacrifice a creature. Kazool's Fury deals damage equal to the sacrificed creature's power to any target. So it's a fling that, of course, on the other end is just a tap land.
I like this card a lot because there's a lot of decks where I'm like, I wish I could fit a Fling effect in this deck. But Fling itself is a pretty narrow card and not great. And there's plenty of instances where you draw the Fling and you're like, I don't have a really big creature. This card sucks right now. But there's plenty of instances where you go, wow, if I could just draw a Fling, I will kill that person and win this game.
Yeah, or I need to save this creature because I can sack it in response to someone trying to steal it. So that effect is actually pretty useful, I think.
And the fact that, like, in the instances where it's not useful, you just play the land side. Mm-hmm. I actually like that card quite a bit. And that's another reason why I'm going to like this next card, which is Song Mad Treachery.
Yeah.
3 red red for a sorcery. Gain control of target creature until end of turn. Untap that creature. It gains haste until end of turn. The other side is the tap land, taps for red. Very narrow effect. But there are plenty of times where this will kill someone.
Or just win you the game, or get rid of a game-ending threat. If you have a Goblin Bombardment and you want just one more threat and effect that isn't going to affect your mana base. Sick.
But
it costs a bunch, but it's still very playable.
Yeah, that effect, just weighing it with the times when it's completely useless in your hand, makes you not play it more often than not, just because when it's bad, it's so bad.
Yeah.
But now when it's bad, it's not so bad because I just play the land side of the card.
Mm-hmm. So again, like Brian Stoutarm, Timurit the Murder King, Anax, Hardened in the Forge. These are all decks that want to take creatures.
Marchesa,
sack them, get extra value. And threatened effects work really, really well with that kind of effect.
I think I just tend to like these cards where the upside is narrow, like the front side is very narrow, but has huge upside. Fling has just huge upside when it's great. When it's good, it's great.
But you don't want to waste a spell slot on it.
Because when it's bad, it's so bad.
But yeah.
But I'll waste a land slot on it, maybe.
Yeah. This is definitely going to make for very interesting. I mean, I still think you're casting Starmag Treachery like 80-90% of the time as a land. But that 10% when it's not, and someone goes, you top deck that, right? Like late game, you're like, oh, God, top deck. It's not a land. It's a threatened effect. I can now do something. I can now survive. I can now win, whatever it is. Just so much better than just a regular mountain.
I mean, this episode's coming out after the most recent episode of Game Nights. It's after. Sweet, okay. I can say this. If Carolyn top decks or draws that card...
Oh, she wins.
She wins the game.
Yeah.
That changes the entire dynamic of the end of that game. So just think about how good that is. And if she draws it early, it's just a tap land and probably doesn't affect the game in any way negatively for her.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Let's talk about the white ones, the white mythic...
Emiria's Call and Emiria Shattered Skyclave. So Emiria's Call is 4WW for a sorcery, 7 mana. Create 2/4/4 white angel warrior creature tokens with flying. Non-angel creatures you control gain indestructible until your next turn. So not until end of turn. You get a full turn cycle here. So this is actually pretty interesting. This, especially in multiplayer, means that your creatures now have indestructible for Mel's turn, Josh's turn, and Craig's turn. 7 mana, you get 8 power worth of Angel Warrior creature tokens. And on the other end, it's just a tap land that comes into play untapped for white if you pay 3 life.
I mean, obviously this goes into token decks.
Yep.
Because you could also, if you have Doubling Season, Parallel Lives, Unknowing Procession, those are the type of decks where, hey, I'll pay 7 mana to get 4 angels or whatever. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Tristani, Amara, Winota could play this as well.
But again, any deck with white in it, at least enough white that it can conceivably get to white as a cost.
Why don't you have to play this?
Right? Like, it's just so broadly good. And you're right about the indestructible until your next turn is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, great blockers. Now you also have 2/4/4 blockers in the air as well. So this could be like a late game, like, boom, I saved my life for a whole turn cycle. Now I have this massive army to attack with.
Yeah, it's just a good card. There's not much to say about it that we didn't say about the other mythics.
Yeah. And again, like, if you're ever like, oh, but it's overcosted for what it is, it's like, well, on the other end of it, it is not overcosted. On the other end of it, it's just a land. Yeah.
All right, the next one is Undo Inversion. 6WW for a sorcery. Destroy all non-land permanents.
Oh.
Other side is the land that has to enter the battlefield tap and taps for only white mana.
So every white deck again?
That this wants this is
board wipe?
Yeah. To me, this is like, because when you need that board wipe to save you, like, you're going to lose the game if you don't cast that spell.
Yeah.
And the reason people don't like board wipes is that if you're ahead or winning or your board's in the best position, it's dead in your hand. And the fact that, just play the land side then of this, and it's not that bad, right? It comes to play tapped, but it saves you from losing in the other scenario. It's very similar to the treachery effect or whatever, where it's like the upside is so high, but we don't like it because of the downside. Well, this takes away so much of the downside that, I just think like it's really good.
Yeah, so far, almost every single one of the mythics and rares have been playable in decks just throw it in, replace a land with it even.
Yep.
It's pretty good.
I do like your plan. We'll talk about this later, though, about counting it as a spell still and just having your deck have 40 lands in it then.
Yeah.
Because, three or four of your cards are lands on one side.
Always going to hit land drops.
Yep.
I need that. Kabir Takedown is next. It's 1 in the white for an instant, and it says Kabir Takedown deals damage equal to the number of creatures you control to target creature or planeswalker. The other end, it's Kabir Plateau, a land that enters and the battlefield tapped and taps for a white.
So just a removal spell, a little bit overcosted, but it is an instant. You have to have enough creatures, right?
Because that's the one. Yeah,
it counts creatures. The number of creatures you have, but...
But playable. Token decks again. Just do it.
Just like the fight spell.
Slip it in there.
McKindy Stampede is the next one. 3WW for a sorcery. Creatures you control get +2/+2 until end of turn. Other side, tap land that taps for white. It's called McKindy Mesas. In token decks, there's often the same balance similar to equipment decks.
Mm-hmm.
You've got cards that make tokens and cards that pump all your tokens. And you usually have relatively few cards that pump all your tokens because
you don't want those with a dead board.
Right. So those are just less reliable because if you draw, you know, as strong as Creator Hoof Behemoth is, if you draw it without a lot of creatures on the board, it's not that great.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you draw the token creators with no pump, you're still doing stuff and you can still win by just attacking with 40 creatures, even if they're 1/1s.
Yeah.
So this is just a card that goes in all those token decks because it takes away some of the downside of those pump effects.
It's giving me some Lion King vibes.
Yeah, it totally is. Simba!
Sorry, it may re-traumatize some people out there. All right, next up is Sigiri's Shelter. One and a white for an instant. Target creature you control gains protection from the color of your choice until end of turn. I mean, again, it's slightly more expensive than like a God's Willing or whatever. But
not
you,
much, but yeah.
But not much, right? You're going to play this in your Shu Yun deck. You're going to play this in your Feather deck. And when it's not playable, it becomes a land. And it just protects your commander.
I mean, if you... Most decks are decks that rely on their commander. So just having some protection for it that, again, is flexible mm-hmm. in the times where you're like, oh, I need to hit the land drop, I just play this card.
Yeah, and also like the protection thing is interesting. If someone happens to use a enchantment that taps it down, you can get protection from that color and then the enchantment falls off. So there's a little bit of upside there too.
But if you have a spot to play your land tapped where it's not going to cost you, play your tap land side of that card. It's
yeah.
only in your deck for the times when like you definitely don't need the land drop.
Mm-hmm.
It's later in the game or whatever, and now it's like way better than just drawing a land.
Yeah.
All right, the last white card, and I only want to talk about it for one reason, is Skyclave Cleric. One and a white for a 1/3. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life. Tap land on the other side. Again, equipment decks. I put this in my Akiri deck because I just want bodies that can hold equipment.
Right.
But I don't want to put 30 creatures in my deck or 35 because then I don't have any slots left over for equipment. So yep. This is like, oh, most of the time I'm expecting I have better creatures out and equipment out already and I just play the land side of this. But in those situations where like, oh, I got 2 equipment but they killed my creatures, well, now I can play this as a creature and put some equipment on it. At least I'm doing stuff. Yeah.
Pretty good. Also, I'm sure there's some shenanigans because it enters the battlefield and gains you life for those infinite flicker type decks too.
Yeah.
So there's a spot for it.
All right. This next, we're going to black. We're almost done here. I think this is the best of the Mythic bunch. Mm. Let's see if you agree. It's Agadeem's Awakening. Black, 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 and X. It's a sorcery. Return from your graveyard to the battlefield any number of target creature cards that each have a different converted mana cost, X or less. So if I play this for X is equal to 7, that's 10 mana. But if I did that, I could get a 7 drop, a 6 drop, a 5 drop, a 4 drop, a 3 drop, a 2 drop, a 1 drop, and a 0 drop.
Yes.
All onto the battlefield. Battlefield.
Yeah, you can get 0 drops. This is very similar to Gruesome Menagerie, which allows you to get a CMC 1, 2, and 3 to the battlefield. I think this is the most powerful because there's the most text behind it in terms of all the combos we found.
There's so many combos with it.
Yeah. So again, on the other side, Agadeem, the Undercrypt is just a land that comes in the battlefield tapped unless you pay 3 life to tap for black mana. So
it even can become a land. Yeah. It's the untapped land is possible yeah. on this card. This is like every deck that can create a lot of black plays this. I guess you have to have creatures. You got to have
mm-hmm.
20 plus creatures or so, but. Oh my gosh, here we go.
I mean, look, if you can get a Walking Ballista and a Viscera Seer for really cheap,
yep.
right? Because that's like a 0 cost and a 1 cost. So you can just cast this for 1 black, black, black and get 2 combo pieces out of your graveyard,
ugh.
Which is pretty powerful. And if you have Mikaeus out, boom, you're just going to start winning.
Yep. And then you've got all the decks that are just filling their graveyards with creatures. So the Caradors and the mm-hmm. Marins and the Gisa and Gerolf and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, and if you're casting it for 6, you can get Viscera Seer plus Malira and Kitchen Finks. And
oh,
that's
boy.
Just immediately infinite. And if you have a Blood Artist type effect on board, you just win. You've cast it for 7, you can get the same combo, but now you add a Murderous Redcap because that's a 4 drop as opposed to a 3 drop. If you get 8 plus, then you can just get all these Kiki Jiki combos. So like this card just says win the game on it in like a bunch of different ways. If you
yeah, true, like Revel Arcs and Karmic Guides and stuff
yeah.
too, right? Like you get all these recursive pieces back out of your graveyard that get you into the loops that make you win again. Yeah, that card is nutso. I think the best of the bunch out.
I'm playing it in a lot of decks.
Yeah, for sure.
Marchesa for sure as well.
all right, we got 2 more black cards to talk about here.
Okay, this one is also very good. Mm-hmm. It's Hagra Mauling, 2 black, black for an instant. This spell costs 1 less to cast if an opponent controls no basic lands. Looking at you, Josh. Destroy target creature. So it's just a murder. 1 black, black, instant murder, and then it's a land on the other side.
Yeah, that I think a lot of taps. Games that's going to be 2 black, black.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah, but still, 2 black, black. For like I've played Utter End in decks and stuff, and so just the fact that what we keep saying.
Just another removal spot slot spell that can also be a land.
Yep.
That's great.
I actually like this one a lot. So it's Malakir Rebirth. One black for an instant. Choose target creature. You lose 2 life. Until end of turn, that creature gains. When this creature dies, return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control. And it's the tap land for black on the back called Malakir Mire. So cheap. Instant speed. Saves your creature or... if you've got like a Gary or a Kokusho,
mm-hmm.
you actually purposely, proactively cast it and then sack it yourself. Yeah, I just like this card a lot. I just think there's a lot of instances where this can do a ton of work for you. And then when you're not in those instances, obviously you just play the land side.
Yeah, Kokusho seems really sweet with this. Masker Girl as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's just, I mean, this is an effect that in Limited, you're like, I don't want this effect. But in Commander, when you're able to rebuy Enter the Battlefield effects, you can definitely do a lot of good with this.
I think in Limited, you want this effect because it's on a land, though, right? So that, like, when you draw it on turn 8, you're like, oh, I can do something rather than just give me
another exactly. land. It's kind of a combat trick in a way.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all the cards we're going to talk about. There were obviously a bunch that we skipped. Let's just go into a broad discussion here now that we've seen a bunch of the cards. Are modal double face cards good?
Yes. Just generically very, very good.
I think it's probably going to be incorrect. Like, people are going to do it, obviously, but I think almost every deck will be better if it has at least a modal double face card than if it doesn't.
Yeah, again, the downside is so minimal. It's not taking up a land slot. It's not taking up a spell slot. It's just in this weird position where you can be like, yeah, no worries. It's a land when I need it. The tapped ability isn't the worst. As long as my deck doesn't need to be super hyper efficient, I can probably have that as a downside. Helps you hit land drops more and just gives you more power to your deck. Fills in another slot of card draw, removal, whatever it is.
So I think the question's going to be like, how many of these can you put into a deck? When are which ones good? Because once you get into like 3 colors, you actually have 18 cards plus the choice lands,
mm-hmm.
you know, to choose from. And you definitely don't want to run all 18 modal double face cards because there is diminishing returns. You don't want that many lands in your deck that come into play tapped. You know, if you build a deck and you have 37 lands, let's say, and 12 of them come into play tapped, you know,
that's a lot.
That's about as many as you would ever want. Like, you probably don't want more than 10 that come into play tapped if you can help it. But if you're at 5 come into play tapped, it doesn't change your deck much to have 1 or 2 more come into play tapped. So obviously, like, there's a lot of calculations to be made. How many do you think? I mean, it's hard to answer, but like,
it's every deck's going to be different.
These? Yeah,
I'm personally not trying to put more than 2 to 3 in most decks, and unless it's a very specific scenario where the deck is like Kefnet or is wanting to try and bounce lands and do like put, you know, the sort of the those sorts of effects in there, I don't want to run too many. So I would say like anywhere between 2 to 3, and I'm definitely choosing the ones that synergize the best with my deck, not just the ones that are like, yeah, I could have an extra threat and effect. Like, if I don't have sack outlets in that deck, it's much less enticing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think most decks are probably correct to have 2 to 3. You know, obviously the mythics are all fine because
they're so powerful.
Yeah, and the downside of land comes into play tapped is not even there.
Yeah.
Three life is considerable amount even in Commander that you have to at least think about it as a downside. But like, we all play, you put Ancient Tomb in every single deck if you could, right?
Yeah,
and that does a lot more than
three. You would put Mana Crypt as well.
Yeah, so I think if you count the mythics. Like, every deck should have, and when I say should, obviously we don't have unlimited cards, right? And we don't have unlimited dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, even, you know, I'm not going to own unlimited amount of the mythics. So I'm going to have to pick and choose among my 27, 28 decks, you know, which ones go into. But in the Magical Christmas Land world where I had, you know, 27 of each of the mythics,
right?
Then every deck I think should have to be at maximum optimization.
Optimus Prime.
Should have at least one of those mythics, maybe 2.
Yeah.
That's how good they are. Even if they don't synergize very well, because that downside of land comes into play tapped is not even there. So I think, yeah, I really believe that a lot of these are going to see play, and most decks should have 3, 4 of them, maybe, if you count the mythics, maybe even 5.
Yeah, and I wouldn't go just like one of these for a land slot either, necessarily. There are times where, yeah, you can maybe go down 1 or 2 lands, but I think doing that too much is also a very risky thing to do. If anything, I would just say up your land count, you know?
I love that, actually, just like replacing a couple of spells with these and a couple of lands with these. So now I'm running 4, and my deck has virtually 39 lands, 40 lands.
Right.
Whereas it had 37, 38 before,
mm-hmm.
and that's just, I think that's just going to make your deck just a lot smoother. You just won't have as many games where you miss your fourth or fifth land drop, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a big, big deal. I think you lose most games where you miss your fifth land drop. I think that's like a death knell for most games.
Yeah. That is a very important land to hit. There are a lot of decks that very specifically like these cards. Goblin Charbelcher is one is like all about revealing cards from the top of your library to reveal a land card. And it's like a Lands Matters deck.
So you put in all these in that deck because they are lands you can play that don't stop the Charbelcher effect.
Yeah. If you have Crucible of Worlds or are playing Ramming Up Excavator, this is just, you got to play these cards for sure.
Yep.
Same with any of your play more lands a turn type cards, Oracle of Moldiah, because then you really don't care if it comes into play tap because you're playing 2-3 lands that turn. Corsair of Kruphix can play.
And
on
you want your land density to be higher so that your Corsair of Kruphix and Oracle of Moldiah have a better chance to hit.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, well, if 7 of my spells are also lands on the other side, that's just more chance for those cards to get me value. Yeah.
Yeah. Moldrotha, Yuriko, a lot of those cards, again, just like these are very solid puts into all of them.
So those are the decks that especially want. Yeah. MDFCs. Now, are there any decks that, you know, especially don't want MDFCs?
I'd say, like, we wrote down the newest Omnath because he's all about the landfall triggers.
Yeah, but I think he does want them, right?
Yeah, like, you're right. You just want to put more. I can't actually think of many, unless you're going to, maybe if you're playing a super competitive EDH deck that just cannot afford to have a single land ever enter the battlefield untapped.
Then you could still play the Mythics.
Yes, long as the Mythics aren't, like, I would say, like, a 7-mana spell in the Mythic is maybe a little too much. Seagate Restoration maybe a little too expensive.
But it combos well with cards that are played a lot in that format, like Labman, Jace Wielder of Mysteries, Thassa's Oracle. Although, usually when those cards work, you're going into some kind of combo and you don't need a Seagate Restoration.
Yeah, you don't need 7-mana to play it. But again, in those
Agnium's
decks,
Awakening,
too,
though, gets played in CDH, I bet.
Oh, 100%.
As just, like, a backup, like, hey, I'll get all my combo pieces back and win. That's
Yeah, again, for 4-mana, the fact that you can get a Ballista and a Viscera Seer back is really powerful, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think there's too many decks that do not want these cards. And then there's a bunch of cards that just kind of get better if you're playing a number of these, and it might cause you to play even more of these in your deck if you have these cards already. So, like, bounce lands get decently better, right? Because if you draw a bounce land on turn 8 or 9 and you're like, hey, I'm going to play my bounce land, I'm going to bounce my Seagate Restoration back to my hand, and now I can cast it.
Regrowth one. Yeah. There's so many, yeah.
Yeah, the regrowth one's great, because then now I'm gonna get this out of my graveyard. So my bounce land just basically was a regrowth.
Yeah, my bounce land is not just an extra land slot or an extra land in my hand because I was able to draw a land. I actually got a spell out of it.
Yeah, that I'm gonna cast right now.
Yeah.
And anything that can bounce lands later in the game. So we're talking about, like, Capsize
with buyback. Yep.
Yep. Venser, Shaper Savant can bounce lands. If you're playing Moloku in your deck, which bounces lands for other effects, anything that can bounce a land all of a sudden just. Man, Capsize gets quite a bit better. I just pointed out my own thing with buyback.
Bounce lands, and you have more landfall triggers as well. It just seems like lands really did matter to the design team when it came to Zendikar Rising this time around.
Also, things like Zurn Orb maybe gets a little bit better. Strip Mine, I think, even gets a little better. Because let's say you're in a situation and somebody's about to... They're doing that thing. They're comboing off. What's the counterspell one?
Jawari Disruption.
Okay, so...
Jawari Disruption.
So let's say you played it as a land early in the game, and it's on the battlefield, and somebody has cast Expropriate, taps out to do it, and you go, I'll strip mine my Jawari Ruins, I'll play Snapcaster Mage or something.
Yeah, or I'll Moloku it back to my hand, I'll replay it. Or, yeah.
So, like, strip mines, wastelands, Zurn Orbs, things that can kind of get your lands into your graveyard somehow just become a little bit better because now you have these play patterns that you're not going to do all that often, but at least it's available to you. Whereas if you drew your Snapcaster, didn't have other counter spell in your graveyard, you're just kind of hosed. This is like, oh, well, in some circumstances, I will turn this land into a spell in my graveyard and then get that out of my graveyard.
Yep, and it's good for you now as well if you're trying to strip mine someone else. They're trying to play a bounce land or turn a land. You're like, well, hold on. Or, like, they're trying to bounce something, like, you can get rid of their very special lands. So I think land destruction is on the up and up. Not mass land destruction.
All right, so one thing we wanted to say sort of... you know, we've wrapped this up now. We've talked about modal dual face cards. I think we're going to see, or double face cards, we're going to see a lot of them. We wanted to make sure everybody knows that Wizards has said there are going to be more of these coming in future sets.
Okay.
So specifically, Morrow announced, I believe on his blog, that they've got modal double face cards coming out for the next 2 sets after Zendikar Rising. So Kaldheim and Strixhaven will have these. He also said that those MDFCs won't necessarily all be lands on one side.
Whoa, so we get spell, creature.
Creature sorcery, creature enchantment. We don't know how that's going to pan out. I think they're going to finish the cycle of the choice lands, lands on both sides. Yeah, to do the last four of those. But after that, who knows how this looks like? And it changes the evaluation again if there's sorceries on both sides or something, or a sorcery and an enchantment or whatever.
Or so that's instant in the sorcery, right? There's a lot to consider. I'm really excited, and Strixhaven makes a lot of sense for this. Yeah. All the wizards are just playing with the spells and making weird things happen.
Right, right. All right, so to the listeners, what do you think of the MDFCs, the modal double-faced cards? Do you think it's a staple mechanic, and you'll basically be running at least a couple of these in every deck?
Yes.
Or do you think they're going to be more... I think there are people out there that think they're going to be more narrow than that and don't see them seeing as much play. Like to hear from you, Twitter, on the comments below this video, wherever you want to get at us.
Especially if you've been playing them already, because the set's coming out very soon. So, or at least by the time this is out, the set is out.
Yeah,
so.
It's been out for a little while.
Yeah.
I know they're really good in draft, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching the streamers play them in draft, and every time, like, they'll get their first opening hand, and it's like seven spells. You're like, wait, you can't play that? And they're like, well, thank God three of these are lands. I'm like, whoa! That just made your first hand keep so much better.
Yeah, if you have 7, 8, 9 MDFCs in your draft deck, your deck is really good, as long as they're, you know, on color.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
And you don't mind being a little behind with the tap land.
Now, if you want to get a hold of all of these cards, the place to do it is cardkingdom.com/command zone. You know, especially the mythic ones, I think everybody's got stars in their eyes. They know what decks they want to put them in away.
And your Crucible of Worlds, now is the time to pick them up.
Oh boy, get Crucible right now, because if they don't reprint that, it's going to go through the roof just based on all these cards.
Yep.
Zendikar Rising really made the stock on Crucible of Worlds go way, way up. So it was recently reprinted, but as that time period from when it was reprinted gets farther away, the price is just going to go up. So cardkingdom.com/command zone is the place to order any and all of your Magic products and singles, booster boxes. Mm-hmm. Been hearing good things about set boosters. I haven't opened any myself, but Vinny texted me the other day and was like, hey man, set boosters are super cool. And they're fun to play PyGal Magic with.
Yeah, because they're very themed around specific things.
I guess so. I don't know why, but
much more playable.
Yeah, I think there's just more rares and stuff in it, which makes it more fun.
Yeah. And of course, if you want to protect those cards, especially those Crucibles or anything else you're buying, those special foils, the brand new commanders from the Zendikar Rising commander sort of pre-cons, lots of awesome new cards. Make sure you put them into Ultra Pro sleeves, put them into Ultra Pro deck boxes, play them on your sweet new Ultra Pro playmats. For those of you that missed out, the Epic Play Playmat Kickstarter is now over.
Oh, yeah,
but
sorry,
we'd like to give a big shout out to everyone that contributed. I know Jesper was personally blown away by the response. We are as well, and the art, of course, is amazing. And we always have trusted Ultra Pro from the beginning. And a lot of people are like, oh, you guys have offer a Stitched Edge playmat? We're like, we've never needed it. We still have playmats from our very first Kickstarter 3 or 4 years ago that look and function just as well, and we've taken them to conventions and all that stuff. We really do stand by the quality of Ultra Pro's products, and that's why we endorse them every one of our shows. And you can support our podcast, Game Nights, Extra Turns, all of our content by just purchasing Ultra Pro product yourself.
Yeah.
Easy as that.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. There's nobody better than Ultra Pro. All right, finally, make sure if you are a patron of the show that you take advantage of this opportunity to audition for Game Nights. We're going to choose a lucky fan, just as we have the last few years, to be a guest on Game Nights next year. The only requirement, well, there's two, like you said. One, number one is you have to be 18 years or older. Sorry, that's a legal thing. We would have that go away if we could, but we can't. The other requirement is that you need to be a patron of the Command Zone, so patreon.com/command zone. But you can be a patron at any level. So $1 per month will get you eligible to audition for Game Nights. And, you know, it's really funny every time the fans come every single year. You said it earlier, but it's totally true. It's one of my favorite episodes that we do and every year. And it's really fun. The people who've come on have had a great time. We give them a bunch of swag from Wizards and Ultra Pro. We get to hang out and play not just the game we play on camera, but we also... Hopefully, you know, because of the pandemic, we're going to play this by ear, but we usually gather like all the game nights that are in the area, like DJ and Kyle and everybody else, and we have a big game night the night before. So it's a really fun experience. If you can audition at all, I would recommend it.
Yeah, and it's okay to sign up for the Patreon for the sole purpose of auditioning for the show.
Yeah, totally fine.
Again, that's just a way so that we just, you know, if we opened it up to everyone, we would never see the end of the auditions. And then
we can't go through 10,000 auditions. So it's a way to sort of limit it. And also, our patrons really do keep us running around here, and it's a way to say thank you to them.
Yep. Okay, end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. I got someone.
Oh, sweet.
Not someone, I got something.
All right, you
saved
us.
In fact, it was the first time in Emmy's history that a single show swept every single award that it could.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. I just started watching it. I just got to the second season.
I haven't watched it, but me and my girlfriend would be like, well, we have to watch that show now.
You really do. It's fantastic. It's called Schitt's Creek. I'm not swearing, everyone. It's S-C-H-I-T-T-S.
It's actually $ C-H-I-T-T-S.
It's about a family that is headed by Eugene Levy, and his wife is played by Catherine O'Hara. His son is played by Eugene Levy's son, Dan Levy, who also wrote and created the show with him. And they are a like $100 million family that gets bankrupted and has to move to a joke town that he bought for his son as a gift called Schitt's Creek. And so it's like this mix of Arrested Development and like Parks and Recreation. And it's hilarious. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, I haven't watched a single episode, but I've heard people talking about it over the years, and now it won a million awards. So yeah, I'm going to be just like you.
Full sweep. I was like, what?
We literally, my girlfriend and I were like, okay, well, tomorrow night, what time do you get off work? Okay, we're going to watch episode one.
Nice. So. And they're all 20-minute episodes. Also, if you guys are fans
on Netflix,
of like,
right?
Yeah, if you're fans of like Best in Show or any of those movies before.
Amazing.
Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are the husband-wife couple that have the Yorkshire Terrier in Best in Show, and they still have this amazing husband-wife chemistry that is, it's just hilarious.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, the characters are the ones where you first are like, I hate every single one of them. They're just, and then like after two episodes, you're like, wait, they're all great. They're all great, great characters.
All right, that's awesome. Schitt's Creek, check it out on Netflix. All right, big thanks to our editing, graphics, and logistics team, which is Ashlyn Rose, Craig Blanchett. I can say it, Craig. Sorry.
Ironworks.
Craig probably doing the bulk of the editing on this episode. If it's not him, it's going to be Manson Lung. We've also got Lady Danger, Jake Boss, Josh Murphy, Alfred Estaca, Patrick Nahn, and Sam Waldo.
What a fam. Love them all. And of course, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer and Sam Waldo. Sam Waldo actually did this specific animation that lives behind us on set, which I just get entranced by sometimes. It's really fun to watch.
We were excited because I was like, we've never done underwater before. Let's try that. And,
and it's
course, easy for me to say because I'm just like, let's try that. And by let's, I mean you, Sam.
Well, Sam knocked it out of the park. And you can see Jeffrey's animations at the beginning of our episode as well on youtube.com/The Command Zone Podcast. And you can find Jeffrey on Twitter at LivingCardsMTG. Whew, good one.
All right, everybody, that should do it for our Zendikar Rising set review shows. Only three of them in 5 hours total or so.
Fun times.
Fun times.
Thanks all for watching. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.